you know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Bissell, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker, and my first feature film, The Alternate, is out right now.
And I'm Eric Toms, the producer of the Making Movies is Hard podcast. I'm a comedian, writer, and actor, and my first film, Bakersfield Noir, will be out next year. This week, we talked to Maria Luftuff and Love Martinson about their first-time documentary filmmakers, talking about their upcoming release, Calendar Girls. We'll discuss their amazing film festival run and what it was like to premiere at Sundance, as well as working on location with kids. And then we'll play a round of my creation, The Game. I'm trying to channel Liz there, where I'll be asked a question for the first time ever. But first, Ulrich, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing very well because I'm talking to you today, which is exciting and new. Eric had this interview he wanted to do with these filmmakers, and you know, we didn't really have room in the schedule, so we're like, Eric, go for it, and then let's do a bonus episode. So here we are, bonus episode time, which is really fun. We weren't sure if we were going to make this a Patreon only thing, but surprise, surprise, we wanted to just give you all a holiday extra. So we released this all for y'all in the world. So everyone that listens to the show can listen to this. I don't know what day we're going to drop this. Probably maybe right before Christmas as a little early Christmas present, I think might be a good idea.
It's a stocking stuffer. Yeah,
exactly. A little stocking stuffer. I'm doing good. I think on one of the last episodes, I talked about how I had a meeting the day that we recorded. Did not happen. Was going to happen the next day. Also did not happen. Maybe going to happen today. Did not happen, or I don't think it's going to happen. So I don't think we're going to have it till next Monday. But basically it means that there's going to be no excitement for the rest of the year, because I think it's a little too late to like start, you know, making offers or whatever. Or like if we do make an offer next week, we almost certainly won't hear back until after Christmas. But I'm okay with that. I don't feel like there's any rush, like whatever, you know.
Don't you think it's so odd that in our business, it's just everybody knows that, like, look, the last 2 weeks in December, nobody's going to do anything. Like, we're just wildly lazy like that. Like, we're taking a full 2 weeks off and we'll be staring at the wall.
Well, it's funny because like my writer buddy was like, oh, if we don't do anything before Thanksgiving, it's over for the end of the year. Nothing's going to happen after Thanksgiving. And I was like, dude, I think you're being a little like crazy. And then like then he was like, oh, it's December. Oh, we don't do it. Oh, no, he's like just like making a big deal. And then, you know, talking to Liz last week or whenever it was, she was like, oh yeah, like, you know, we made an offer and we're waiting to hear back. It's like, yeah, shit does happen in December, people. It's just like a mess. So it's a total like constructed thing that like you can't do any business, you know, around the holidays. Of course people want to do business. Movies are being made during the holidays
all the time.
Yeah, there's a movie being made right now in the Bay Area that like I'm going to be working on. So it's like just always things happening. Don't believe the hype. Just move your project forward. Who cares? You know, and like the writer, again, I'm really ragging on this guy. I love John. He's a great guy. But he was just talking about how like, oh, we won't hear anything for the end of the year. It's like, who cares if we don't hear anything until like January? What's the difference? It makes no difference. I think he just wanted to, you know, he wants to move it forward and he's just excited. So, but it's all going to be good. Other than that, yeah, just trying to. I'm like thinking about writing. I'm not actually writing, but I'm like thinking about it a lot and like, you know, okay, how am I going to sit down? When am I going to do this? I think over the next couple of weeks before the new year, I'm going to get some writing done. So I don't think I'm going to write a whole movie or half a movie or anything. But
you're not going to write a movie over the course of 2 weeks?
No, I have it all out. So I don't know if you've been hearing about this, but I have this movie all outlined and like I have like half of it written. So like 45, 50 pages written.
Oh, wow.
I just need to fucking finish it. And like, I pretty much know what everything that's going to happen. I know. So it's like, I just need to put it into action. And, you know, so if I get like 10, 12 pages, 20 pages between now and the end of the year, I'll be stoked. Mm-hmm. But I really want to get this movie out of my system. Cause I think once I get that done, then I can move on to something else. Cause I tried to write something else while this movie was still half written and it just didn't work. And I think it's because this is blocking me. So, yeah. But what's going on with you, Eric? What does Eric do during the holidays? What's happening?
What's happening with me? Lots are happening. I have got My, like, as I said in the intro, my first feature film's coming out next year. So the editor just sent me a block of edits that he has just worked on. So I have to give the okay of those and see if we need to do any reshoots or anything like that. So that's very exciting. Wow. We're hoping to get picture lock before the end of the year.
Wow.
We're close, but as you know, it's the devil is in the details. So you want to get like all of the little shots together. You need to make sure like all the everything is all set and looks and you're happy with it. I had a very fancy meeting last week with a very fancy company regarding a script that I wrote 10 years ago.
Wow.
That has finally been kind of making the rounds. It's way too early to talk about much else. But during the holiday break, they have said that they're going to be sending out the script to a few directors as well as their production manager.
Wow.
So people are reading my stuff, which is cool. And this is the first script I've ever gotten an option on. And for those of you playing the home game, I wrote a script 10 years ago, and I've so far made $200 off of that script. So guys, this is a business model that will sustain you. Granted, you don't need money.
Yeah,
exactly. But that's very exciting. And then I'm just looking forward to hanging out with the family. I got, you know, I have two kids, and they are in seventh and fifth grade, and they're still at a super fun age where they want to go out and do stuff with me. So I think we're going to rent a boat this weekend.
Wow.
Which sounds very fancy. In essence, it's like a golf cart that is in the water, and you can kind of putt around like the harbor in it, and then you bring food and things, and then like, you know, we're just gonna have lunch in it.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be a good time.
Okay, I have a few things. One, the fancy company. Can you say what the budget level of this script is, or in the rough ballpark?
I can tell you the script it's two characters in one location.
And oh, I think, is it the one I read?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny when they asked me during this fancy meeting, just like, well, how much do you think we can shoot this for? And I was like, honestly, below the line, like production, you can shoot it for $250,000. Now, how much those actors want to be in there, I don't know, a bazillion dollars? Like, that's completely up to them. But, I mean, the script is designed to be very cost-effect friendly, which is one of the reasons why I think, like, they're interested in it. And it's very much an actor's showcase. So I think that if you got the kind of actors that would get some sort of theatrical release, I think it would be in the $5 million range.
But having said
that, you could, I believe, easily do this script for $500,000 to $750,000 and have it come out looking really nice.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of Ex Machina, right, with Oscar Isaacs, who was like a pretty big star at that time, but not nearly as big as he is now. I think that was like something around $2 million or $2 to $3 million or something. And your movie is sort of similar, like in like locations and sort of style. I wouldn't say style necessarily, but like, I guess the what happens in the story, the kind of content, it's like, you know, all within this one space. So I could see it being around a $2 million movie with some really nice talent, you know, or maybe four.
Yeah.
But very cool, man. That's awesome. That's really exciting news. I want to know the name of the fancy company. Maybe you can tell me after this.
I will 100% tell you afterwards.
Ooh, I get to know. Liz wouldn't tell me who her actor was from the last episode.
Oh, really?
She would not tell me.
Even off the mics?
No, she doesn't want to jinx it. She doesn't want to say anything until she knows either way.
Are you superstitious like that? Or are you afraid to talk about anything for fear of it coming true or not true?
I'm superstitious about specific things. I'm not superstitious about things like that, you know, like I privately I've told a lot of my friends like who we've gone out to for this movie, you know, who we've gotten nose from and whatever and all that stuff. But like, you know, I'm superstitious. Like it's a funny story. So my mom lives in Nevada, and me and my brother and my mom too are all football fans. And since we were probably like 10 to 12, we've been betting on football with my dad. It was like a thing that we just did forever. And he let us start betting really too young, but we really had a fun time doing it. And then,
what's the ballpark of those bets? Is it like, oh,
like $5?
Okay.
Yeah. $5, $10.
Okay.
But then, you know, so he died a couple of years ago, and then my mom basically kept it going for us, you know, and she goes down there, but she never bet before, you know, ever. And she still hasn't ever bet any of her own money, but she like fills out the cards for us. But, you know, she'll constantly get it wrong. So like, she'll like go and like, she'll put a bet in, and then I'll be like, okay, mom, double check what you got. And she'll like, oh, I put the Seahawks, not the Niners or whatever. and then she'll go back and she'll change it. And like, you know, she knows the guys down there, so they'll change bets around for her. But so the superstitious part is like, if she puts a bet in wrong and she says, oh no, I'm going to change it, I can't let her change it unless I have to make another bet. Because I'm so superstitious that like what she actually put in incorrectly will be the true thing and I'll win.
That's the winner
combination.
Yeah.
So like, but I believe that my original bet is also could be that way. So I don't want to miss out. So I have to do both. So basically I have to do another bet because I won't, it's just too much for me to be like, I just feel like this, you know, fate will screw me.
Yeah.
If I stick to my guns and not go with this new random chance, you know, and that, because that's bitten me in the butt before, where like oh, my dad's like, oh, you should do it this way, and I'm like, no, you're wrong, and then like, of course he's right, and like, you know, would have been like $10,000 I would have won or whatever, you know, but like maybe $1,000, something like that. But anyway, so then I can't, if anyone suggests anything, you know, or like, I think, well, not suggest. I should basically try not to take suggestions from my mom or my dad or my brother, because like then it's like then I'll just blame them if it's wrong. But like if anything like that happens where it's random, I just have to go. So that's how I'm superstitious. So it's a different brand of superstition, I think, than what Liz subscribes to.
Yeah, I am such an existentialist. I don't believe in like any superstition. So I will walk underneath a ladder if a black cat crosses my path. I don't care. Wow. I have no problem mentioning. I'm not going to say the name of the production company because I believe it's
wrong.
Kind of politeness. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of a faux pas in our business. But yeah, I mean, like I'll tell you who what actors we're going out to. It's like,
well, yeah,
they're going to come. They're going to come. It has nothing to do with the universe hearing me whisper.
Yeah, as long as you're not like, you know, blasting it out publicly.
Yeah.
For, you know, because then I think like then it just. I don't know. Yeah, that's, I don't think, is a good look for whatever reason to like be like, we're reaching out to blah, blah, blah. Wish me luck. It's like, you know, no one, that's just not good for anyone, you know?
And also you need that big exciting announcement later on to come down and just like, oh, you know, we just attached.
When it's official, when everyone says it's okay to release it, because like apparently there's all these rules, like people sign on. It's like, okay, well, don't say anything yet. You gotta wait.
We're currently going out to Burt Reynolds' hologram is really
that's what we're shooting for.
I hope we get him.
Yeah, and then if you don't get Burt Reynolds, then you'll get Marlon Brando.
Yeah. Oh, I should be so lucky. You know what else is great? Just like Burt Reynolds' hologram, our Patreon. So don't forget to support us on Patreon, everybody. It helps us out create this show, and we are able to connect with our audience in such a fantastic way. So please go over to patreon.com/MMIH podcast today. And for just $1.99 a month, you can get all of the back episodes, which eventually are all going to be behind a paywall. So far, how many are behind the paywall now?
Oh, all of seasons 4, 5, and 6 and half of season 3, which I'm working on right now. So by the time you hear this, it'll probably be all of season 3 and it'll probably be only season 1s and 2 that's left. And then by the time the new year hits, it'll be only seasons 7, 8 and the part of 9 that'll be available that not behind the paywall. So all the old days with Timothy, all the beginning episodes with Liz, all gone.
Unless you pay $1.99 a month to our Patreon, and then you have access to all of those, along with a bunch of other bonus content, videos and all of our weekly meetings as well, which were super fun. They're always hilarious. I love listening to you guys and talking with y'all.
Oh yeah, it's fun. That's like basically no one right now knows who you are because you're only on those weekly meetings. They've heard your name being thanked, of course, in the episode, but you've never done this. So before we move on to the interview, really quick, give people three facts about yourself that will kind of describe you in a nutshell of who you are.
I tell you what, we'll do four truths and a lie. I have been a stand-up comedian for the last 20 years. My first feature film, which is coming out next year, I made for $1,000. I am a Nichols finalist, and I have starred alongside Eric Roberts.
Hmm. That's tough because I know two of them to be true. Mm-hmm. And then the other two feel like they both could be true. Maybe you are like a Nichols semifinalist, but not a finalist. Is that right?
That is correct. I was a semifinalist for Nichols. Well done. You do know me very well. For those
having only met you in person once, I know you very well.
That is the thing that's so odd about us. Yeah, like we've been corresponding for the last year and a half weekly. Like, like texting probably every day.
And we hung out in person one time at Austin, and it was the most fun.
It was a great weekend. It was very, very fun. And, you know, despite what we're going to work out with our, you know, sponsors to go next year as a podcast or whatever, I think I'm probably going to go personally, mm-hmm. most likely, no matter what, just because I had such a good time. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But hopefully the Weasels go as a show again and do more stuff. That'll be really cool. Let's get to your conversation with Maria Lefoy.
Why don't I go ahead and take this? All right, without any more jibber jabber, why don't we go ahead and go to my interview with Maria Lufthof and Love Martinson and their movie Calendar Girls. Guys, welcome to the podcast. Please introduce yourselves.
Okay, thank you. I'm Maria Lohuvud. And
I am Love Martinson.
And we're the co-directors and co-producers and co-everything of this film and in life.
Now, your documentary is Calendar Girls. Please give us the elevator pitch for Calendar Girls.
Maria, go ahead.
Okay. we've been doing this so many times, but now we're in a moment where we're just moving forward. So it feels a bit weird to go back to talk about this film again, but okay, the elevator pitch. This is a feel good dance documentary about a senior dance team in Florida, and it's also about a film about friendship. And it's a lot about dance, and it's about aging on your own terms, I guess.
That's a terrific way to put it. Now, we met doing a Q&A a little while ago, and I was so taken by the two of you and this film that I approached the hosts of our podcast and said, I would love to interview these people because I think this is a fantastic story. And they said, yeah, sure, sounds good. What I know about the two of you, so neither one of you were filmmakers per se, not professional filmmakers when you decided to do this. So where were you in your careers when you decided to take on Calendar Girls?
We were not even amateur filmmakers.
We were not filmmakers at all.
not at all.
We had made, the only thing we had made was a music video. We were both, I'm a composer for mainly film music, but also I played in a lot of bands and produced a lot of other music. And Maria also played in bands before. So we did a music video for Maria's band. That was our only like filmmaking experience.
Yes, filming my family in Florida. So we were used to film in Florida, which makes with this light that you have in Florida, everything looks good in a way. compared to Sweden, which is all dark and gray. So that was a good start. And we decided when we did this music video, that was a few years ago, but also my dad used to live in Florida part-time, and we thought, okay, we have to find a way to spend more time here and maybe do something else, because we have careers as you said, of film composer for TV and films, and I've been a graphic designer and art director for, I don't know, 10-15 years. And we were in a time of our lives and careers that we thought, okay, we can do this, we're pretty good, but it started to get boring. We thought, okay,
you started repeating yourself in your, like, when you're starting to know your work that good, and is you get to a point where you don't really know how can this be interesting for me.
So you wanted to challenge yourselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So and it was also at the time of our second kid was 3 months old at this time. So it was a perfect time in your life to start something, because we had some time off. When you live in Sweden, you get a lot of time off when you get kids. You get to have like a longer parental leave.
It's 1.5 years for.
So it's
1.5 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not like that in the US
can share when you as we like. So yeah. We took like half of it each.
Yeah.
So
it's a time to like take a step back from your work life and start to think about, okay, what else can we do, and is this what we want to do? And then we start discussing, maybe we should do a project together in some way.
I'm sorry, I'm still reeling from 1.5 years of leave. Because in the United States, you get, I think, about combined 20 minutes. Then they say, get back to work.
I know. I don't know how you do it.
I have no idea how you do this. I don't know.
It's a culture we have in Sweden to get to do this. And we used it in a way. Of course, we spend time with the kids, but you also get some time to think, and that was a good thing. So we had this idea of doing a project and maybe doing a film together. So that was the starting point. And we started doing filming some Swedish people in Florida, because we were there while we were taking some time off. We were in Florida, and the idea was to film Swedish people there.
So we had a small camera and some microphones with us to do this, to start this documentary project that we had in mind with the Swedish people.
I'm sorry, just to reiterate. So was there any other crew, or was it just the two of you?
Just the two.
Yeah,
of us.
Just okay. The two of us all the time.
Yes, it's been the two of us all the time. But yeah, so we started that project with the Swedish people. We did a few interviews, but it was hard, as some of them didn't want to be in the film, and there it stopped, obviously.
Yeah.
But we were in the mindset of thinking of ideas, and so when we stumbled upon the Kalinda Girls at a kids' event, we thought, okay, this is more interesting. Let's try to do something with them instead. And they were so open. They said, yeah, sure, we can do anything. I want to be in the film, and I want to be in the film, and everybody wanted to be in the film. And that was
the opposite of the Swedish people that we were trying to film, that they didn't actually want to be filmed.
Yeah, just to give people context, so the Kalinda Girls, for those who haven't watched the documentary or maybe aren't familiar with them, it's a group of women who are retirement age. They're based in Florida, and they wear very outrageous kind of clothes, and they dance typically for charity events.
Yes.
And so you had originally seen them. It was like a Toucha truck, or it was some sort of a film or a fair. I'm sorry, some sort of fair, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was the kids' event called Toucha Truck.
And our oldest kid, he was crazy about cars at that time. I think he was like 3.
Yeah. So they were part of this event where you could look at big cars and tractors and everything. And they were dancing on the back of a truck. So that's just
And yes, they, as you say, they are, you know, most of the time dressed in very outrageous costumes. And this year they had unicorn hats. No, that was when we started filming. So a lot of the times in the film, they wear unicorn hats, which we just love because it's a great thing that they do have that.
Yeah.
So.
And they really, when we saw them, it was like, at first you just get the energy and you really, you're impressed by the whole appearance, and they really draw all the attention to them. So that was our first impression. And then you start thinking about, we got a lot of like mixed emotions when we saw them. And
what kind of mixed emotions were you feeling?
It was like just a positive feeling of seeing them and being inspired by them, I think, but also the feeling of like a bit of almost embarrassment for them, if you know what I mean.
Which is crazy, yeah. But to be honest,
the first feeling was just like, oh, aren't they a bit too old to be doing something like this? Was our first.
And now when we've been working with this for 5 years almost, and we've been thinking about this, it's like, oh, how can we ever think like that?
Yeah.
But that was also something that we realized like the same day. Why do we think like this? Why?
Yeah, it was just the first, you know, the first feeling that you had this mixed,
I guess,
emotion.
We were not used to it. We've never seen people that age just dance in these kinds of costumes, which is sad.
Yeah.
But they faced, we had to face our own prejudice
about older people, I guess.
Yeah,
it's a ageism that's built in a lot of people, I think.
It is. It's
yeah, and in watching the film, I think it becomes very clear that the women dress provocatively. They dress in very sexy outfits, and they have fishnet stockings and the heels and everything else. You know, we spoke a little bit on the night of the screening that at first you had talked about, like, oh, it felt very desperate. But then over time, that went from desperation to, no, just celebration. It's just these women who are having fun. That's really what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's not like it was, we saw that feeling instantly. We questioned our feelings. So that was what started the whole process. Like, it wasn't that we were feeling, that wasn't what lasted in us. What lasted was their energy and their happiness and their friendship and everything. So that was what sparked the idea, I think. But also that we saw this other feeling made us think that it could be a film. Because there's a need for this, to show this to the rest of the world too.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, because it's a documentary, of course, you're just, I always think documentarians are kind of crazy, because you're going out with your cameras just hoping to capture lightning in a bottle. You're hoping something great happens.
We're talking about that. We're starting a few new ideas, and we're planning a trip going to a place, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of time, and we might be able to speak to a person for 10 minutes.
Yes, and it's,
or maybe it doesn't happen, and then we spent a lot of money and so much time doing nothing. So that's exactly how it is.
And to find babysitters and
it's a process, crazy.
Do we have the energy to do this?
I do want to talk about the two of you being parents in a little bit, but first off, just to give an idea, so how many shoot days, if you had to estimate, was Calendar Girls?
Good question.
Oh.
It
went back and forth 4 times, and we were there for like 4 to 8 weeks each time. And we filmed like every day.
Wow.
We don't know. We have so much.
I would say maybe 100 days isn't, probably more, but
wow.
But we filmed all the time, so a lot of the time was just getting to know them, and, you know, getting them being used to us hanging around them. So there's so much material that we didn't of course, didn't use, but that we never planned on using either. It was a
and that we never even looked at because
no,
we knew
we are not going to use this day at all. They get used to the cameras,
and we got used to the cameras because we had to, you know, learn the technique. We had to practice.
And you never know when something did happen. All of a sudden, something did happen that made sense, and that you realize in the editing that, oh, we have this from this day that we filmed the whole day of them practicing, that we thought this is nothing. But when you put the pieces together and you realize what points in the events that happened, some points that we didn't even know that we had filmed, we realized, okay, we have actually caught this on film.
Yes, like there is a scene when they talk about, there's a character, a woman in the team that's got a disease, and they talk about that before practice, and our cameras were rolling, but we didn't pay attention to it.
We had no idea at that time that she was talking about a serious illness that she had gotten, because she didn't tell us about this.
No, we didn't know about it.
But she talked to one of the other ladies, and that was things like that that we could find in the material that we had no idea that we had filmed. In the editing, we knew, oh, we're looking for pieces to puzzle together the story of how that illness evolved. Mm-hmm. That we could find stuff like this and in this all this material. So it's really.
And I think another thing is because we knew we have this limited time, we're going back to Sweden. We were there for a few weeks and we're going back and we don't know when we can do this again. So I guess we just felt like we have to do as much as we possibly can when we.
Yeah.
So when you were going back to Sweden, is that when you were editing the footage and kind of putting it together and like, oh, okay, here's this could be a potential storyline. Here, this one could be.
Yes.
That's how we did it.
So every time we went back and we edited and it got more and more clear what we wanted to do. So the first period, we just filmed everything, everywhere, everyone. We did a lot of interviews. We couldn't focus really on anything.
Yeah, we didn't know who to film because the group consists of, I think there are almost 30 women, and we had no idea who the film was going to be about. So we had to learn, get to know them and learn who will have an interesting story that will combine good with the other stories.
And who is a person that is willing to get more personal and that we...
And also we knew early on that we didn't want the film to be about their past, since a lot of films about older people they're talking about their past lives. So we wanted to focus on what's happening now. And it's impossible to know who of these persons are going to have things happening in their lives at this moment that are going to be interesting for the film. So we started filming, I think 9 of them we followed more closely. And then we narrowed down during the process, okay, these are more interesting and things are happening. So that's also why we had to film so much, because we didn't know who was.
You didn't know where to, you didn't know what was going to follow up. Now, it's just the two of you figuring this out as you go along. Were there any major disasters or were you, I mean, because clearly you have roots in the entertainment industry, even though you weren't necessarily documentary filmmakers.
Yeah.
Were there other filmmakers that you were talking to during this process that were kind of helping you give a little bit of guidance? Or was there anybody that you were kind of, you were watching their work and kind of saying like, oh, we should be looking at these
people? We got a lot of help from, we have some friends that are successful documentary filmmakers and also producers, and so we took a lot of help from them in this.
Yeah,
in
we shared materials. What do you think about this? We shared rough cuts. We shared everything.
And also advice on how to approach people, and we tried to get as much, since we're humble in that we didn't know that much about about the process of making. We were very confident in our vision of the film, so that's why we wanted to keep everything to the two of us, like producing it ourselves and not bringing in an outside editor, because we had the vision was very clear, But the process of how to actually achieve it was a bit.
We needed advice. Need advice from other people too.
And I think that worked very good, just sharing with people and getting some advice during the process.
Now, talk a little bit to your. There's the two of you. How are you dividing your duties amongst the two of you? How did you decide? Like, okay, you're going to take care of this. I'll take care of this, and then we'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Oh, it's been. We never decided anything. It's more like it's happened.
I think it comes naturally. We've been together for a long time, and we know each other very well, and we know our strength. And so it's very natural. We didn't actually have to talk about who will do this and who will do that. It's just we know each other so good. So it's just happening, I think.
But it's been.
It's like when you're if you're in a relationship, you have like chores at home. You know who does what. You know.
Yeah.
You don't have to talk about it, and hopefully it comes out evenly.
So, yeah. Now, also, you two being together, as you mentioned before, you're parents. You have two beautiful kids, who I got to meet, and they're very sweet. But how are you spending all the time with the Calendar Girls and still raising these kids? Talk about childcare. Talk about just that time with the children.
Yeah, it's all thanks to my parents, actually. We had to bring them for all the filming periods. We brought them with us to Florida, and they were babysitting.
We could never have done this film without your parents, and also my mom has helped a lot in Sweden.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting thing about doing a film about women our parents' age,
mm-hmm.
and also about freedom for women this age to maybe choose not to be a full-time grandma.
Yeah.
Also, we are so dependent on our parents, so that's been interesting to, you know, maybe we shouldn't take them for granted. Maybe they want to do something else. So I hope we've been.
I think we also might have sparked something in them to go and do something else. Because
oh, really?
They have actually. We live in Stockholm, but now they are trying to move out of Stockholm just to get away from us.
You know? They bought a home in Italy, some freedom.
That's what the film does to people.
So they're just afraid that you guys are going to make another documentary and then they're going to be stuck with the kids again. So we got to get out of here.
No, but I think Calendar Girls is inspiring to people, especially in their age, to go out and do the thing you dreamed of, that you wanted to do all your life, but you were scared of doing.
Yeah, to just do it before, you know, before, I don't know when to say before it's too late, but it could be, even though you have a lot of more years to live, maybe something happens, maybe you have a close, maybe your husband gets sick, or maybe you can't take your health for granted.
Yeah.
So I think it's I don't think it's that they don't want to be with other kids,
no.
But maybe they've been inspired.
Sure.
To follow their dream to live in Italy.
To
yeah.
Be more separated from
and they should. That's good.
So it's for us it's not the perfect thing. But through making the film we also started understanding them more, I think.
Really? So the documentary was kind of did you start some sort of kind of conversation or dialogue with your own parents about their age and things that they wanted to do?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so. It's really helping us understand them in that way. And it's easy to see your parents as just someone that you can take for granted. And I think we really started thinking about that.
Yeah.
And to
see them as persons.
Yeah.
More.
This was your first documentary. This is your first foyer into being filmmakers. Would you do it again, knowing like this is the mountain that we have to climb? Because you said you're moving on to other potential projects. What is on the horizon for you both?
We want to do it, but in some ways I want to be as naive as we were when we started, because we didn't see all the things that could happen. that maybe
we had no expectations on what would become of what we did. We just did it on like the joy of doing it. So there was no like goal, end goal to it. But now getting to know all the whole process and, you know, all the steps and what happens when the film is done and how you realize how unfair it is to make films, because a lot of good films never get to, we've been lucky to get our film out there, and like going to Sundance was the perfect start for a film. But we can also see if this wouldn't have happened, the film could have not gotten the attention it has gotten now. So you start thinking about those things, like if we spend 4 years doing another film and it just takes another turn some way and nothing happens to the film, it's harder to just be blank and think what am I interested in the subject. You start thinking about the whole process of it. But we're trying not to, and actually trying to just focus on what am I interested in right now in my life. But I think
would be a fun thing to do for us. We're trying to, but because it gets so easy that you start to think, okay, would somebody would want to fund this? Would somebody want to see this? But with the calendar guy, who were just, oh, we have to do this. We have to do this. Yeah. It's so fun. It's so interesting. We have this energy. We want to see this. So, and then we were so, I guess, we talked about the film with other people in a way that they had to be inspired, and we were. So we want to get back to that naivety and that excitement about another subject. But it is hard. I really think it's hard because it feels like you see the obstacles.
Yeah.
And it is a risky business, because before we had more other incomes from the graphic design and the music.
Yeah.
And now it's okay.
Yeah, we shifted our careers in doing this, and it's hard to go back to doing the other thing because this is so much fun. So you want to spend your time doing projects that you love and that you are doing for yourself. And so that's our, I think we have we're developing a few ideas now, and I think we have a few good ones, hopefully. But as I said, we might spend this time traveling around doing nothing.
Well, you mentioned Sundance, and Calendar Girls had an amazing festival run by any standard. How many festivals did you get into?
I think it's a little bit over 40.
Yeah, it was 40 last time we counted. Yeah. I think
might but it's be still 50, but it's still coming, and yeah,
it's a few more, and we also thought maybe, you know, you'd never know if we will have this opportunity again. So when festivals asked, do you want to come? Do you want to represent the film? And we always said yes.
Yeah.
Because every time we can, it's been a few no's, but because we just want to make the most of it. And it's been a very, very, very fun year.
Well, and talk a little bit about Sundance. So, of course, Sundance is, you know, the festival that every filmmaker wants to get into. What was it as difficult to get into as you'd assumed? Did you need help to get into it? And what was the experience like in itself?
Was it hard to get in? It wasn't hard since we did, but I guess it's really hard.
So you didn't know anyone at Sundance. You just did a submission and then no, happened to get in.
We had a meeting. I think we did a funding pitch a year before it was finished. And
in Sweden, yeah. It's a Nordic documentary festival. So we did a pitch on that one.
And then after that pitch, we had a meeting with one of the programmers for Sundance.
Oh, wow.
Like, she really liked the idea, I think. And so we just tried to stay in contact with her and just update on how the film is developing. And
weren't ready that year. She said, send it in. We will look at it. We said, no, we're not ready yet. But the year after, yeah, we were ready to send it.
So, yeah. And then we applied for some other big festivals before that. So you're just counting down and you get some no's and you get some no's and then you start to lose your confidence. Every no's, like, it brings you down a bit and you try to use that and just work harder. If you get a no,
yeah, make okay, it better.
We'll make the film better. And so in the end, we just had Sundance was like our last option. Okay, let's just hope this happens. And then you put all your focus in on making this happen. So I think we did all we could, like just reaching out to the contact we had. But I don't think it really changes your chances of getting in there if you know something. I think it's more of you have to make a good film and you have to have a lot of luck that your film has a subject that fits the other that year, yeah, and for films. So
we're very humble about, we were lucky.
There's a lot of really great
film,
films,
of course, but there's so many others.
Doesn't get into big festivals, and it's not that the films are not good. It's just
hard to get. You can't. There's only so many hours in the day. You can only watch so many films. Now, when it came to distribution and sales, when you were on the festival run, is that where you found your sales agents and your distributors?
We had some. I think we did before, actually. It was we had distribution.
Yeah, we had that before Sundance.
Yeah.
So, but then a lot of things have happened, and I don't think we should talk about this actually. But yeah, but we ended up doing the theatrical release ourselves in the US.
And then the film will be released with Greenwich Entertainment in February.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, I don't want to get into numbers and things like that, but to speak to your point before about how this is it's a difficult business. You never know what's going to come down the path. You have two kids, so of course you want to plan for their futures as well. Did you find that using Calendar Girls as a template, is this a sustainable job that you can do moving forward and be at least somewhat confident that you'll have a roof over your head and you'll have some food in the refrigerator?
Good question. I would say no. It's not a sustainable.
But we did anyway.
It's not sustainable. It's no guarantees to have a roof over your head.
No.
But you do it anyway.
I don't know. We'll find a way in some.
There's always ways to make it work. I think I've been working I've been freelancer all my life, and there's never been any security in any way at all. Anytime I have always been like, okay, how am I gonna solve paying the rent next month? But it always works out. So I'm 40 years old now, and it's been working for 20 years. So there is some kind of stability and sustainability to that, I think.
Yeah, we'll make it somewhere. We can also do some graphic design and some compose. We could, make a mix.
But I think if you do good work, it will work out in the end.
And if you don't, need a lot.
Yeah, you also have to keep your, try to keep your costs down.
Yeah, try and stay relaxed. Just relax. I've spoken to a few filmmakers who are based out of Europe, and on the one hand, it feels like there's definitely some pros and some cons. Some of the pros being that there is a lot of government funding for filmmakers and for the arts. However, the con then becomes, yes, you can go make a project, but it has to fit in this very specific kind of box. So are you finding, with Calendar Girls, it was a very surprising documentary that I don't think anyone would expect to go out and ask to find a documentary like this. You had to just stumble across it. Have you found that the European kind of funding format will help you in the future? Or is it just going to be too specific for the sort of projects that you want to take on?
I don't think it's that specific, actually. There are,
No, I would say it's the opposite of specific. It's the great thing about that kind of
we
funding
can always,
is
always only talk about Sweden.
Yeah,
course,
in
but,
Sweden,
or maybe the Nordic.
I think Europe
countries.
Is similar. Most Europe, but especially in the Nordic countries, it's the funding is very open to new ideas, and that's part of the whole how it works. They want to try to encourage new filmmakers and new ideas about filmmaking. So. So
they encouraged us to, you know, be more brave and to be more.
Yeah,
really.
So,
and
yeah.
It's all the ideas that they are funding. It's actually coming from the directors or the producers. So it's not that they are asking for these kinds of stories. It's everyone can go and try to fund their film, and that's very
very inclusive.
Yeah, like
yeah.
It's of course you have to be even to try to think about doing a film, you have to have some kind of financial stability, otherwise you can't afford to try to do it. But it's open to anyone that can.
Yeah, you come to them with your idea, your project, everything that you want to do,
yeah.
And present it to them. A lot of time I think it's maybe good to partner with a more experienced person, but we could go to them. And
I mean, it's we didn't think when we started that we were going to be able to fund our whole film through the with no experience, no, like, who are they, and they have never done anything and they have a film idea. Let's give them a lot of money and see what happens. That's
but
a really good thing. That
yes.
Is possible.
Yes.
You wouldn't get that if you go to private investors. No one would give us any money for this idea.
No, it's
and
too risky. But they could take that risk.
Yeah, they are not interested in getting their money back. They are interested in making a high quality film.
And also you get a full budget. As a start, you get some development funding, then you go back and what do you think about this?
Yeah.
And then you get some more and more.
Yeah.
And then for us, it's been as we talked about before, that we shared everything with some filmmaking friends. We also shared everything with the Swedish Film Institute. And that was also a very, very good thing to get their thoughts about it.
Yeah. And it's nice to have, you can get to keep all the creative, like, no one can tell us what to do with the film. It's our decision until the end. And that's the thing we were very scared of in the beginning, is to, if we were going to bring in outside funding from like private funding or executive producers, and just giving away the ability to do the exactly what we wanted all the time. So, and through this funding that we got, you get to do that. They are not telling you to do something else with the film.
I guess there are some limits, but they never said anything to us that you can't do this.
Yeah.
You can't do.
So you felt a real sense of autonomy and freedom.
Absolutely.
Well, that's fantastic.
I find it hard because we've been in the U.S., we don't know that much about how it works, but when we talk to other directors, and it seems like you have to know a lot of the right people to be able to do a film. It's hard to come from nowhere and just go and get funding for a film. Then you have to fund it yourself, or have some rich friends or something just to.
Knowing rich people certainly helps you put together an indie film. That'll do it. But yeah, as well, I think there's a lot of grants that are available in the United States, but they have very specific guidelines of what they're looking for and what they want. And also, writing a proposal for each one of them becomes very, very difficult and time consuming, because you're spending all of your time writing out all of these specific essay forms that you have to in order to get this money. So that becomes very difficult. But it sounds like in Europe, it was really, you were just dealing with one agency.
Yeah.
Well, there are a few.
The biggest money comes from one big. But as you said, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot
writing
of paperwork,
all the
yeah.
applications.
It's a lot
insanely. Insane amount of paperwork.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you, it also helps the filmmaking. I think you have to like you have to focus your ideas and present them in a good way. And for us, it at least it helped us to see what's the film's
just to focus, I guess.
Yeah, to focus on
write it down, yeah. To tell it in words to someone.
So you need know this,
when
this
you've done 10, you feel like, oh, I don't want to do another one. But at the beginning, it was very helpful, yeah. Because we had to narrow down why is this film needed,
yeah,
or and why are we the right persons to tell it and everything like.
And you also
like
get
that,
those
that they ask,
like you have some. Points in time where I have to deliver this for this date and for this date, because if you just have your own, if you just have to answer to yourself, it's hard. You have to set up some goals, I guess, and
sure.
and that I think it helped for us just
to have some deadlines
yeah. In the process, because okay, now if we would have gotten all the money, just like here's this amount of money, go out and make a film, I think we would have harder time focusing on, okay, well, where should we start and where should we? So
the constraints were helpful for you just to give yourselves focus and to give yourselves deadlines. So now you've done a documentary. You've done it probably the hardest way you possibly can, with these incredible amount of shoot days and then editing and then shooting and editing. Do you see yourself, and clearly, you know, you're still very excited about film and you still have a lot of energy, and do you see yourself just moving forward with documentaries from here on out, or do you see like narrative coming in or television coming in? Do you think that there's one specific path for yourselves, or are you just keeping it open?
I think we're very open. We're also now starting to opening up for producing other films as well. Yes. And being a part of someone else's vision and help them, that's one part. And we're developing an idea for a TV series.
It's a documentary TV short form. But it could be a narrative in the future.
I think we have to do maybe a couple of more documentaries just to get into, like, we still have a lot to learn about that area. But that starts to feel like,
when that gets boring, I think it's
when you know we still have so much to learn. It's the feeling we have, we're just like open it up. When you start learning something, everything seems so easy, and when you get to know a little bit more, you realize, okay, I know nothing about this. But the first feeling of thinking that something is easy because you know nothing about it, that's a good feeling. And then you have this hard when you see, okay, now I have to go and dig deeper and really understand how this works. So that's where we are now, I think. Just trying we have to learn this for real.
Yes, but we're not bored.
No.
Not at all. So.
Well, now, because the film has done really well, at least on the festival circuit, and it's going to be coming out here in February. It sounds like it's, you know, you accomplished the dream, you know, you did it, you got your film out into the world.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've gained some sort of status now, maybe in your home country, and maybe the next time you ask for money, it will be a little bit easier for them, because like, oh, of course we know them, they did Calendar Girls.
I hope so.
I guess it's the idea is the most important thing, but yes, it is of course easier to say, oh, here, we have a new idea, do you want to look at it? And I think it was.
But the thing is, it never was that hard for us. We were surprised ourselves that they gave us money. You know, we knew that we had a good idea and that we were doing good work, but we thought it would be harder.
But we were always overdoing.
Yeah,
we were very
over-delivering on everything. That's like, okay, we have to cut the best trailer that anyone has ever seen, and we have to write the best application. And you know, if you put that goal that high, you almost always succeed if you have.
I hope we don't get lazy now.
Yeah, that's what could happen if you think, okay, we have done this, you should trust us now. And I think that's a danger of if you get too comfortable in your position.
Yeah, it could be.
So I hope we don't. I think we should try to just over deliver even more, because that's how you make a good film, and not by being comfortable in, no, I think, oh, I know how to do this. I'm confident with myself.
Yeah.
Then we should do it in another way. If we feel that way, then we should try to do it in a completely different way, I think.
So it sounds to it like the real takeaways that you two are kind of imparting to people is, one, just you put your best foot forward, like always do your best work. That's always the way that you're going to kind of stand apart from everyone else. And then also you sound like you're very open to experimentation as well and trying something, you know, because as you said, you know, you walked into this blindly, you didn't know what was happening. So now moving forward, first off, before we go any further, how do people find you? How do people find the movie? What do you have? How do we get to you?
Instagram is Kellen Girls Film.
Facebook, Kellen Girls Film.
And the website is
KellenGirlsFilm.com.
And you can find all that. It's still playing in some theaters around the US. So, and it's adding, we're still adding cities that we're trying to book some more cities. So if you go to KellenGirlsFilm.com, you can see all the dates in the US.
But I guess most Facebook and Instagram are most updated.
Yeah. And then it's going to be available from February 21st. I think it will be available on like all the streaming, you know, Apple, Amazon.
Things
I don't
like
know,
that. All We're not it's not on sure. us. Yeah. It's on Greenwich. So
but it will
good.
Be streamable from mid-February. That's it.
Okay, so we have a couple of final questions for you. What is the best filmmaking advice that you've ever gotten?
Oh.
I think the best for us was the advice that a friend gave us. Is make a film about, make sure that you like the people that you're filming, because you're going to spend so much time with them.
Yeah.
I think that really, that was a good thing for us, especially as the first time filmmakers, because
you get personal, you get friends, and we're thinking about that as for new projects. Do I really want to spend my next 4 years with this person or these persons? If the answer is no, I don't think it. Of course, there has to be films that are made about really
but it was
bad
a good,
people.
Good advice for us.
What is the worst filmmaking advice you have ever gotten?
Good question.
And you don't have to say who told it to you. Yeah. Keep that to yourself.
I don't know if I have a specific one, but it's been a lot of people saying because they want to be
no,
be
I think
kind.
Oh, sorry. They a lot of people said in the beginning it's too hard. You shouldn't do
too
it.
Too hard. That it's maybe make it short. Make it don't.
That was the worst. I hate when people say that. It's just, why are you saying this? We have a lot of energy. We want to do this. And you're just saying it's hard.
That is the absolute worst film advice, which is just don't bother.
Everyone knows that it's hard.
Yeah.
We know it's hard. So how do we move forward?
Yeah, exactly.
So yes. That's so when people try to, want to be kind.
They want to be nice. And
they want to be nice, you know, low our expectations, but to do that. So
they want to protect you, but in protecting you, then you get nothing accomplished. Like if you really wanted to be safe, you just sit at home under your bed.
Don't do it, because you get that a lot in the whole process of when you're doing the film or doing the distribution or doing anything. It's just don't do it.
It's going to be hard.
It's
going to
cost
a
lot of
time.
Money.
What was the first film you've ever considered that you've made? It could be a student project or maybe a music video. What was the first thing you ever made, and how do you feel about it now?
The first film we ever made.
Well, it can be anything. That could be. It could be a student film. It could be like, you know.
I made film when I was a kid. I made like those Lego films, you know.
Oh, like a stop motion?
Yeah. That was,
how do you feel about that?
For a long time, but I know I was happy about them when we did it. I was proud at that time.
So you, okay, well, that's kind of an interesting insight, because you must be an extremely patient person to do to be a child to do stop motion animation. So documentary was no big deal for you at all.
It was a different time then. You had a lot more time as a kid, I think, and more. You didn't have those distractions that kids do now.
And then my final question, is making movies hard?
No.
No.
Really?
You know, we don't want to
we want to encourage people to do it. No. So don't say
of course it's hard. Yeah. You know, it is hard, but
it's mostly fun.
Yeah.
If you have to say one thing about making films, it's fun.
You know, it's a lot of stress. It is, but it's, you know, when this project has, you kind of miss it as well when you get back to your more normal life. Yeah,
like everyday life is harder.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, through everyday life is, I think, it's harder than making a film because you have so much energy and
boring.
Fantastic. Well, I really want to thank the two of you for taking the time and coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Congratulations on everything you've already done, and best of luck to everything you're going to be doing in the future. So thank you very much, and please stay in touch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Nice talking to you again.
Eric, give me your highlights from your talk with Maria and Le'uv.
Well done, first off, with Le'uv's name. The few things that really stuck out to me, one, I was so impressed with the fact that it was just the two of them. They were the entire crew on this whole thing, which was incredible. And also, it's such a well-made documentary, and this is their first time as filmmakers. They both have roots in the entertainment industry. He is a composer. She does graphic design and is an art director and has been for many years. But this is their first time like really making a film, and it's so touching and so beautiful. The reason I think it went from just being kind of a neat idea was their vulnerability. One of the things that they had mentioned is, of course, this is a documentary about these retirement age women who dress up pretty provocatively, and then they choreograph these really intricate dances, and then they go and to public locations, and then they do these dances for charities. A lot of them have to do with animal rescue for returning veterans. But they'll do kind of, you know, these things for anything. And they are initially, the filmmakers thought to themselves like, oh, look at these older women dressing up, trying to get attention. You know, like, gosh, it's just desperate. It's sweaty. But then they realized after getting to know these women, like, no, they're just having a lot of fun. And yes, they are older women, but aren't older women allowed to dress up how they want to? They've lived their lives, you know, they can just do this and have a good time. And it really made them look very introspectively towards themselves and what box they put these older women in, you know, in society, and the same way society does as well. Like, you know, we want them to be elderly women and be little grandmas and then that sort of it. Like, no, you can do whatever you want at any age. And also, I was really impressed with the fact that they must really like one another because they have two kids. They did this documentary together. They work together. They live together. They raise children together. It's like they're around each other all the time. And I love my wife. We've been together forever and a day, but we don't work together. And I like some alone time. So I was really, really impressed. Like, wow, you have a very well working relationship. That it was something very inspiring. So that was my big takeaways from them.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one thing, you know, to just be a partner to somebody, but it's another thing to work with them creatively on something.
Yeah,
that is like really could be challenging, you know, just with any partnership. So doing it with your you know, your life partner. Oh, man, I can't imagine how challenging that could be. But it sounds like they've got to figure it out, which is awesome.
And they have two really little kids. They have kids, I believe, are 4 and 5 years old.
Wow.
They were doing all of this while raising children. It's like, wow.
Wow.
The other amazing takeaway, and if you listen to the interview, you can hear me gasp audibly. So they have childcare leave, and the government pays them money so that you can just spend time with your child. A year and a half. If you are in Sweden and you have a kid, the government pays you a year and a half's wage so that you can just go be with your child. And that is incredible because...
That's crazy.
In the United States, you get, I think, like 3 months, maybe?
The standard is 8 weeks for men. I don't know what it is for women. I think it's a little bit more than that for women.
I'm trying to remember when my wife went on maternity leave, I think it was the sort of thing like you could get 5 months at like 50% pay, or you could get 3 months at 100% pay. And I think we did something in the middle. I think we did like 4 months at like 75% pay.
Yeah.
But it was.
That sounds about right.
But Sweden, man. That's the way to go.
That's nuts. Yeah, we got to move to Sweden when we have our next babies. Although I think you're probably done having babies.
We're done. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm done. Maybe I'm not. Who knows? We'll see.
Oh.
But Eric, I think it's time to ask the question for the game. Since you're the creator and you're here, do you want to explain to everybody what the game is?
So the game is a made-up indie film situation. It is the idea that you're either going into production, you're trying to make a film, you're on set, and something happens, some calamitous thing. It is a problem that you encounter as a filmmaker, and then I normally pose the question to Liz and Ulrich, and then they have to answer it. But this time, we have a surprise question for me.
Yeah, this is something that a listener sent in to us. Eric was not on the email chain, which was very fortuitous. So I've got this right here. They've been asked to be left anonymous, so we will not know who this person is. But listener, thank you so much for taking the time to write this question. Here we go, Eric. It is time. Let's do this. So you are attached to direct a larger studio film that you've been working to develop for several years. You love this project. You love this script. You feel like this could be a very, very big deal for your career. Finally, the project starts to take off. But oops, you get pregnant. Oh, by the way, you are a human capable of physically rearing a child in about 8 months. And to add to that, on top of all that, you're 40 with fertility problems. So this has been something that you've been working on and waiting for a long time. And it's like kind of a miracle that it's happened.
Yeah.
So do you tell your producers that you are pregnant and let them decide the fate of you and your project? Push the making of the film until after your term and push to get on set as soon as you are physically able, risking being replaced, as well as knowing that if you do push the shoot, by the time you get on set, you may be potentially experiencing the baby blues, postpartum depression, postpartum physical trauma, and or separation anxiety. C, or do you push to make the film within the next 8 months, knowing that the high levels of anxiety you'll experience can impact your developing child, and the more you show, the more you'll experience potential discrimination from your financiers and producers who could, again, easily replace you. D, other. And it's, this person says, feel free to tap into fun pro-choice, pro-life arguments. What do you do, director? What do you do?
Wow, I like that we're getting political now, too, on the show. It's fantastic. I have to say, I'm of two minds, because when my wife... I'm the stay-at-home father in our relationship. My wife has a real job. And it is far more steady and far more lucrative than being an indie filmmaker. So when the kids were born, it was me. It was, you know, I changed all the diapers. I, you know, still pick them up from school. I help them with their homework. I make their lunches in the morning. I drive them to school. All of that stuff. And I will say, and I've had many conversations with my wife about this, I did not like having babies. Babies were really difficult and in not that rewarding. They're adorable, beautiful
to look at.
But it was so hard. Now that when the kids got older, when they were like elementary school age, then I started having a blast. And this is actually, it's a thing that my wife and I have talked about many times, is the fact that this is, what I'm saying is not unique for men. There's a lot of guys who just do not connect with their child till it's a little bit older. However, so having said that, in that mind frame, but I'm also trying to approach it from, as she said, you know, like I'm the woman in this scenario and I'm 40, I've been having fertility problems. And this is something I've spoken with about friends of mine who decided to have kids later in life. Quick, funny side story. So my wife had our first baby when she was 35. And she was convinced when she got pregnant, it was never going to work out. She was the oldest woman in the world. It's her ovaries had dust on them. And then we went to a parenting class before she gave birth, and we were the youngest people by 10 years.
Wow.
So don't worry, you're fine. But now, having said that, if in this scenario, I'm a woman who's had fertility problems in the past, I would say I would put the, I don't know if this is in the A, B, and C, but I would put the pregnancy first, because for as fun and as cool as movies are, the family is going to be forever. Like, you know, you look back and be like, yeah, I made that movie. That's cool. But like having a child is far more fun and far more important and will be far more rewarding than just making one movie. It will, of course, be devastating. It will hurt. Because you've been working on it for, you know, development for years and years. And it could potentially, you know, make your career and all of these other great things. But I think putting time into family is always going to be a better bet. So, I don't know. Does that answer the question? Did I answer it?
So basically you would, you know, tell your producers and let them decide the fate about the project, basically. You'd just be like, I'm having this baby, you know, I want to do the movie if I can, but this is a real, or would you actually just step away and just remove yourself from the project?
You know what I think I would do? I think I would, I wouldn't just put it in their hands. What I would do is I would sit them down, and if I've really been working with them for years, hopefully we've built a relationship and they understand and they will recognize that the work that I put into it. I understand, like, this is a speeding train. Sometimes you got to just go, but I would at least say like, hey, listen, I'm pregnant. I think I can probably work up to this date. And then maybe we can spend that other time. How far along are we in the process? Are we already attaching actors? Have we set a production date?
It's just taking off.
It starts to take off.
Like, it's probably going to be shot in the next six months plus something.
Okay. Okay.
But like, basically it's got momentum. Like, it's going to happen now.
Yeah. Okay. I would explain it to my producers. I would say like, look, I'm not know how I'm going to be able to feel, you know, because I've had, you know, some fertility issues, I may be fine and then just give birth to the baby and need, you know, a couple of months off and then I'm back to it. Or it may be the sort of thing that like, yeah, maybe I have to excuse myself from this project and come back a year later. So that's kind of that's at least what I would do. I would at least tee up to them how I'm feeling and what could potentially happen. And also, of course, I would love to be able to do both. But if one has to win out, it would be the baby.
Yeah.
What about you, Ulrich? What do you think?
So I like the honesty approach. I do the same thing where I would just talk to them, sit them down and be like, look, here's the situation. Because I don't want to try to hide it. I don't want to try to work around it. I want to just address it straightforward. And then be like, this is what I want to do. This is when I can work to, you know, whatever I decide. Maybe, you know, it's my wife worked up until a week before our daughter was born.
Wow.
She thought she came a little early. So we thought that she had like two or three more weeks.
Yeah.
It was like, basically she had to stop working because she went into an appointment and they were like, oh my God, like we would recommend to induce today. But we were like, well, when's the latest that we can induce? And they're like, okay, well, the weekend. So it was like, holy shit. So it just hit us. We thought we had a lot more time, but still, it's pretty nutty for her to work like up to like a month ahead.
Yeah.
But I think for me, like, if I, and I mean, you know, it's hard to know without actually being a woman, like, what you would do.
Sure.
But in my brain, I would say, like, I would put a cutoff. Like, I have to be done by, like, 2 months before the due date, you know, and be like, I want to make this movie. I want to direct it. I want to do everything. But I have to be done shooting by this time. And, you know, if we can't make that, then I would love to do it afterwards. But if that's not going to work for you guys, totally understand. I'll stay on executive producer, whatever. Yeah. I want to be involved, but this, and that's how I would handle it. I would just be straightforward, like you said, same thing, and just like set some ground rules and try to make it happen. But if it couldn't, just realize life's more important than, you know, a career. Although, I mean, I really would do everything as possible to make the movie, because if you do have this kind of, you know, we know, right? Like, if you get a chance to direct a studio movie, like, that could be what your life is.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, one studio movie could be, now you're just doing them, you know, if it goes well. So it's like, I feel like the chance and the importance of that, I would really try to make it happen, you know. But I don't think you don't make any friends, you don't keep connections, you don't make any kind of lasting relationships in this business, or relationships in this business, if you lie to people.
Yeah.
That you, honesty is the way to go, for sure.
And also, I think hiding a pregnancy, there is a limit.
Very hard.
That you can really hide things. Like, wow, she's wearing a lot of football jerseys these days. That's weird.
Some point, they're going to figure it out. So might as well just let them know what you're going through. And then they can partner with you on it. And, like, you know, we're in a modern age where they're not going to just throw you away because you're pregnant.
And, you know, I have heard, I would love to hear from our listeners in this regards, especially if you're in the entertainment industry and if you are a mother, I think specifically. But I remember hearing an interview with Julianne Moore when she was working on Jurassic Park 2, I believe, if I'm getting this all correct. And she really credited the filmmakers for being so family friendly, because she had just given birth. And, you know, she was nursing, you know, and she had PAs coming knocking on the door, and she was in tears thinking, like, oh, my God, I'm going to let this production down. And then the producers and the director coming to her and saying, like, no, take your time. Like, don't worry about it. We can shoot around you. Like, be with your child. We totally understand. So I don't know if that was because it was Julianne Moore and she was working on Jurassic Park 2, or if that
was Steven Spielberg, of all people.
Yeah, he knows how to make some movies. So I don't know, like, is that across the board? Have people had that kind of experience, or is it just for the elite few?
Yeah, I don't know. Weigh in, people. If you've had a bad experience or some sort of negativity around a pregnancy or a baby issue as a woman specifically, we'd love to hear it, you know.
Or if you've had a good experience, that would be fantastic as well.
No, I only want to hear the bad ones. If it's good, don't write in if it's a good one. No, yeah, totally, good or bad, of course. Well, whoever wrote this question, thank you so much. This is fantastic. What a good one. Very different than anything we've been asked before.
Yes.
Eric, did you like playing the game? Was it fun? Was it fun as we have playing it?
Yeah. You know what? I was so nervous going into it because you and Liz are so good at it, and you're both so articulate, and you really look at it from all angles. And there's, I mean, you know, whenever I write a question, I'm always kind of trying to get you two in a bind, but then you always end up having answers that go in some direction I never even thought of before. So I'm always really, really impressed with the two of you. So I was nervous going into it, but it is a lot of fun. I like it a lot.
Nice. Yeah. Well, when you wrote three questions in, like, you know, whatever, a week, when we stockpiled segments for the holidays, I was like, damn, is he going to be able to keep on doing this? Like, this is really good. Like, is he going to run out of ideas at some point? I was like, I don't know, but this is really great. So I guess, listeners, if you have more of these, please send them in. We want to hear them. I mean, Eric is going to be fine, I'm sure, but, you know, I'm sure he could use whatever help you want to give him. If you want to send a question, comment, or suggestion, or a question for the game, you can do that at podcast@makingmoviesthishard.com. Or if you like the show, you can leave us a review on iTunes, which would be fantastic. We don't have any reviews in December.
Give us a year-end 2022 review.
That would be great. How did we do in 2022? Did we do as well as 2021, or was it not as good? Way better? Room for improvement? Let us know. You can also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast, and YouTube at Making Movies is Hard Podcast. We're also at TikTok. I don't know what our thing on TikTok is, but I'm sure if you just look Making Movies is Hard up on TikTok, you'll find us. Thanks to Maria Lufwood and Lahuv Martinson for coming on the show. And thanks to our very own Liz Manischel for setting up this interview in the first place. Thanks to Eric for doing the editing and being amazing. And thanks to Eric also for being awesome and recording this bonus episode in the first place and for being here with me to talk about it. So much fun.
And thanks to Ulrich Purcell for being a fantastic host and just an all-around great guy.
Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next week. I think without any delay, let's get to your conversation with Maria Lefoy.
Why don't I go ahead and take this? All right, without any more jibber jabber, why don't we go ahead and go to my interview with Maria Lufthof and Lahuv Martinson and their movie, Calendar Girls.
All right, get to this part.